back, session number 16906, Reel 2.
Mr. Armand, Reel 2, can you tell me anything more about that attempted German invasion, like what you were doing at the time?
Well, as I said before, we were spread out about 10 yards apart. God knows how far, I don't know. Must have been roughly 20 miles or so, of course. And as I say, the only thing we saw was the fire on the water, on the sea. And no Germans landed on British soil. But a matter of 3 years ago, I read it in the paper where it had been recorded that some nurses in Holland had been treating some burnt bodies that had been washed up on the shore. But as I say, there was none landed on British soil, as we know, and it was never reported. And people disbelieve it, but it is a true thing.
Did the German Air Force do much damage to Great Yarmouth?
Oh yes, Yarmouth was really knocked about. In comparison with London, you know, a little place like Yarmouth, it were almost flat actually. Nelson's Column still stood.
What happened to you after this?
From Yarmouth, we went to Leek, and all had embarkation leave and fitted out with KD.
What? And this was your voyage to the Middle East?
Yes. We was 3 months, I think, at Leek. And we sailed from Liverpool in June 42.
What was the voyage like?
Hectic at times. We went from Liverpool past Northern Ireland and joined up with the rest of the convoy. The rest of the convoy was coming from the north. There were, I can't tell you the number of the ships, troop ships that was going, but we had two battleships, a cruiser, and five destroyers as escorts, and one aircraft carrier, the Illustrious. We had the Nelson and the Nelson and Rodney battleships.
Did you run into the enemy on the way?
We zigzagged maybe half a dozen times before we got to African coast. The submarine warnings was on all the time. I was lucky enough to be selected for anti-aircraft gunner on the boat. Me and Ted was on one gun in three shifts, so 24 hours, and we billeted itself down on the sports deck. We travelled on the Christian Eugen. It was a Dutch structural liner. It was and our full regiment plus quite a few engineers, a few Air Force on our boat.
Where did you arrive at?
We went south and we could see Gib, and we followed down the African coast. We called at Freetown, Sierra Leone, and then at Cape Town. We just anchored out just off the shore. Didn't get off the boat at both these places, but we embarked at Durban and spent 3 days in Durban. I don't think they knew where to send us because Rommel was advancing in the Western Desert, and they thought we'd be too late to get in there. So they didn't know whether to send us to Egypt or to Burma. Anyway, after 3 days, they decided, and they embarked at Port Suez, at the entrance of the Suez Canal. And we were just in time for to get in position for the last push that Rommel was making to Cairo. And looking enough, he was stopped. And
what part did you play in stopping that push?
What
part did your unit play in stopping that push?
We joined the 8th Armoured Brigade, and we was in amongst the tanks. But we were static. It was the Germans that were mobile.
Did you see anything of the enemy on that occasion?
No, not at near hand, but we got quite a few shells in our area. I think the Germans broke through. It was a strategy of Montgomery's to let them go through and then surround them and take over, because the Germans by this time was struggling for fuel and food, and they let him just run out his petrol, and then it was all over. And we went back to Ismailia, and we got refitted, and we joined the Alamein battle.
What, did you take part in the Battle of Alamein?
Yeah, we was with the armour. It was roughly through. Well, we went in with the tanks through the corridor that had been made for us, and landed at the other side of the minefields and took positions just at the side of the minefields, while the tanks and was doing their job.
What was it?
They were fighting the battle for at Alamein.
What was it like passing through the corridor?
A bit weird, a bit frightening, really. Everybody was on edge, you know, when you're going through minefield. And the only people that you saw was odd red cap, what was directing traffic, sort of thing. But as soon as we got through the minefield, we had to get in position and try and make a sort of a gun pit. But the ground was so hard, you couldn't dig a gun pit. You had to build what stones you could, make a little bit of a stone barrier for it. So, but it was hectic, because it was tanks going flying about all over the place and making dust. It was just like a fog. We stayed in that position for about 24 hours.
So you were supposed to be in an anti-tank role, were you?
It was anti-tank, anti-aircraft, yeah. We supplied with anti-tank shells.
Did you open up during Alamein?
Never fired a shot at Alamein.
Had Monty addressed you before the Battle of Alamein?
Oh yeah. He had visited our regiment and prior to the battle, and of course he had all his regimental commanders and for the interview, and they interviewed us. We didn't have a special meeting with Monty. And to meet him for I met him a couple of times.
What did people think of Monty?
Great, just great. Couldn't have had a better general.
Why did you think he was so good?
Because he led from the front.
Did you hear the famous barrage at Alamein that started the battle?
Most of it. The guns were all stretched out, and you had the tanks was all in between the guns, or just in front of the guns, and we was with the tanks. So the Alamein barrage were going over top of us all the time.
What was it like?
Hell. Hell. Really hell. I think that's where half of our people got trouble with their ears. Oh, it was fantastic barrage. It was just like Blackpool Illuminations.
You wear a hearing aid yourself now. Yep. Do you think it dates from that, Alamein?
Well, from guns, I'd say, yeah.
Did you feel confident about winning the Battle of Alamein?
Well, Montgomery said he wouldn't attempt a battle unless he'd got adequate troops, material, food. He said there was no option but to win.
So
as soon as the battle was halfway through, we went on the left hook and come up at Merza Matru. But we was unfortunately a little bit too late because we missed the cream of the German forces had got away. I mean, the Monty, Rommel was like Monty, he saved his best. So he got all his cream out to a secondary position before we got there. But to see the prisoners coming in, it was one long stream, about four or five abreast, coming with Dixies in hand, especially the Italians. You can't imagine what it looked like. A stream of troops going into the prisoner of war camp area, you know.
What was the attitude of the prisoners?
Well, I thought the Italians looked in relief. But the Germans was a bit subdued, I'd say, but lost the arrogant business. We took up a residence at Merza Matru. We was allowed to go and swim in the sea and for a couple of days. And then we never travelled on the coast road in the Middle East. We always was in the desert, always on the... And convoys were travelling at roughly 100 miles a day. So there wasn't much time for eating and whatever. So all they did was to hand you a tin of bully beef and a packet of biscuits. That was your menu for the day. And the convoys went as they do by sea. In a diamond formation. And we was escorting Montgomery's headquarters. We took it in turns for three guns to be in a triangle, one in front, two outside. Right through the desert, actually. Three guns out of our regiment would be guarding Montgomery all the time. And on one occasion, there was a battle going off. The tanks had gone in. And... Montgomery got out of his caravan for a walk. It was like twilight, you know. And he came up to Argonne, and we asked him, it was just casual, you know, no edge about him. He just said, good evening, like, and how are you, and all this. And I said to him, how's the battle going? He said, do you know, he said, I'm the army commander. He says, and nobody's let me know anything. He said, but be ready to move off tomorrow morning. And just walked away. And that's how he was. He would talk to anybody. You know, he wasn't too big to talk to a gunner.
You had the rank of gunner, did you?
I was, well, as an artilleryman, you're a gunner, whether you're a corporal, lance corporal, general, colonel or whatever, you're a gunner. Even the master gunner is a general, and he calls himself a gunner. I was lance bombardier, actually. I got made bombardier after the MM.
What do you remember happening next?
Would have made sergeant except for being overstaffed by sergeants.
So you were pursuing the Germans westwards through the desert?
Yeah. We was out of the line, out of the fighting for a month at Tripoli. We went in as anti-aircraft barrage at Tripoli. We was there a month. And after that month, we handed over to our sister regiment, the 57th, and we joined the 201 Guards Brigade at Mara.
What happened to you at the Marathon?
The Marath line was a tank battle between the Germans and our anti-tank. The attack was 50 strong, and the regimental sergeant major of the 6th Grenadier came over to us and told us that to expect the Germans coming over the hill at 6:30 the next morning, and there was dead on time, and there was 50 tanks, and the guards anti-tank knocked out 27 of them.
Did you see that?
Could see everything that went off, every shot that was fired, and the area was only a matter of three miles from in the valley from one side to the other. We lost two men in the gun team what was just behind us on the other side of the hill. Sergeant Hardwick's gone. They lost a cook and a driver, and that's the only two that we lost in that battle. Two men.
How were they lost?
Bombed the Stukas bombed the rear of most of the artillery and tanks that was behind. And they bombed up between the gun and the tractor. We used to leave the tractor somewhere around about 25 yards or so behind the gun, and it blew the lorry and tent that they had for cooking area, blew them both up. That's Bill Potts, and he'd been our cook. Well, that particular gun's cook from being in Yarmouth, and it was a sad loss for Sergeant Hardwick. He was the mate of mine that lived at Stainford.
How frightening was the fighting for you personally at the Maroc line?
Well, we went against the rules, actually. We were told to keep the gun down unless we come into contact with tanks. And being anti-aircraft gunners and things coming natural to you, when the Stokers started bombing the other side of the hill that we was on, we went into action for, and the Germans didn't leave us alone the rest of the day. We were pinned down in the gun pit for the rest of the day. Yet we had the binoculars on the battle that was going on.
Did you hit any of the Stokers?
We didn't. I think there was two knocked down, but we personally didn't hit any.
So you weren't firing at tanks yourself?
No, because the tanks didn't get as far as we was. They didn't get through. The guards had stopped them from coming through. They'd done a fantastic battle, the defence. Those two things that was amusing happened, where a Yorkshireman and a Lancashireman was in a trench. In the path where the German tanks was going over, and this particular tank went over them, and they jumped on the back of the tank, lifted the lid, dropped the gallon of petrol in and a Mills bomb, then jumped off and blew. The tank went up in flames and got back into the slip train. And the other one was that there was an anti-tank, 6-pounder anti-tank gun mounted on a lorry, and this was manned by Grenadier guards, and they was running up and down the lines of tanks, shooting at them, stopping, firing, going off and firing again. And these were two of the men that received military medals.
Did you see that yourself?
Yes. But before that, the anti-tank guns was in groups of three, and they fired on one particular tank, and they just blew them apart. And as they knocked the tank out, the sergeant of one gun was second hand for the other one on the other side, and he rolled bullets in his arm. And there was three of them sergeants of the anti-tank guns, and all five of them was marched in front of Monty, which were come down to the just underneath us, roughly 20 yards away from where we were, and presented them with military medals on the spot, or the ribbons for the military medal. It was something that was unique. This is probably why everybody liked Monty, because he never risked, he'd risk his own life. He wouldn't save it for special occasions. He'd come on the battlefield. On that particular night, the Germans sent in a rescue party, like a maintenance party, to recover the tanks that could be repaired. And the guards could have popped them off any time they wanted, but they did a sensible thing and let the Germans do all the work and load all the tanks up onto these here tank carriers. And then next morning they just took over, captured them all, and that was the end of the battle. The Germans had lost it, and then again we was given the job of a left hook, went round the back and come out a good few miles behind the Germans. And this was a favourite trick of Monty and Rommel. Rommel used it as well. The left hook. And after that, Monty had decided that the First Army wanted a little bit of help to take Tunis, and he selected half of the 201 Guards Brigade and half of the 4th Indian Div to do another left hook and come out on the First Army side in line with Tripoli. At Tunis, I'm sorry. And that was the battle for Tunis. And on this this first day, well, first and last day, because it only lasted about 24 hours, we was knocked out with an ambush of I don't know how many, but there was Mark 6 tanks which had 88 millimeter guns on, and we got one of the shots went straight through the into the gun carrier. And it seems as if they were only picking on the people that was had guns, like, you know, because they'd been at it all day, and there was two or three wreckages in the area. At the time, we was at we'd parked up in a traffic jam sort of thing, and we happened to be just in front of this wood where the German ambush was, or rear guard action people, and we heard a cry from the back saying that they wanted help, and Ted Greenough was helping this well, getting this fella near to the back of the wagon so we could get him out. The sergeant and I dropped the tailgate and unhooked the gun, and I took his shoulders, and as I took his shoulders, I looked into his back, and he'd got a hole in his back, about all flesh removed from his back, about 9 inches across. A horrible fight. The sergeant took his feet, and we took him into a dry ditch. And at this time, it was just like raindrops, and shells flying all over the place. And we told the other fellows to go into the wood and take him into shelter there. And by the time we got this bloke laid, and his head and shoulders were still on my lap when I nailed down to lower him down to the floor. And there was a shout from wood, and two more had got injured. And one was his arm hanging off, and the other one was some leg injuries. So the